Big thank you to Sue and everyone else that's helped lead us through the service so far. We're going to look at Psalm 37, but we're going to look closely at it in a minute. So if you can bear with me, can you all hear me all right?
Yes.
Yep, cool. We're going to zoom right out and look at desire as a general topic first, and then gradually zoom right back into Psalm 37, especially that verse 4. So do keep Psalm 37 open. We will get back there eventually, I promise. I'm stood in the confectionery aisle in the supermarket and looking at a chocolate bar. I think, that chocolate bar is desirable. Walking past a clothes shop, I see a dress and say, that dress is to be desired. Walking home, I see the grey sky, feel the wind blowing and think, the summer weather leaves much to be desired. Not sentences we hear very often these days. The only context we tend to use desire in is when we think about sexual lust or a heart's desire. In Genesis 3, verse 16, God says to Eve, your desire will be for your husband, and he will rule over you. So we are designed to desire our spouses in a sexual way, but this is not, thank goodness, the desire that Psalm 37 is talking about, you will be pleased to know. So perhaps on the surface, our heart's desire sounds not too dissimilar to verse 4 from our psalm, but I dare to disagree. A quote from Francesca Leobloch says, you're meant to have whatever your heart desires. Whatever your heart wants, that much is already a part of you. Our culture today is full of whatever makes you happy and do what's best for you mantra. It means we find meaning when fulfilling, or rather attempting to fulfill, individual desires independently of their consequences. What about if what makes you happy hurts someone else? What about if your heart's desire is illegal? When the world uses the term your heart's desire, it is always referring to fleeting desires, feelings rather than facts. And temptation will tell you that the world can give you what you long for, but the Bible shows us time and time again that this simply is not true. A quote from George Bernard Shaw says, life contains but two tragedies. One is not to get your heart's desire, the other is to get it. Even without ever reading the Bible, I'm sure it wouldn't take us long to realise that true satisfaction cannot be found in satisfying our heart's fleeting desires. Take adverts, for example. They know we don't need a dress to be complete, but if they show us this beautiful dress alongside other things we already desire, we are more likely to buy it. If we only had that pair of shoes, we might have the perfect figure. Or if we wear that t-shirt, our friends will always smile and our hair and makeup will be flawless. I wonder how many of our heart's desires are misaligned, misinformed, or misguided. And if your heart is full of fleeting desires, don't worry, you're not alone. Unless there are any robots in the room, I think it's safe to assume that we are all in fact human, which means we all mess up. We are all broken. We are all imperfect. None of us wake up in the morning clean shaven or with our hair and makeup perfectly in place, ready for the day ahead. We can all get mad. We can all be bad. We are all capable of evil, whether that is simply in thought or also in action. There will be feelings of desire that we have that are unwholesome, unholy, and unspoken about because we are broken and just simply human. This is not news to anyone. Humans have been entertaining wrong desires ever since the fall. If we look at Genesis 3, verse 6, we read, when the woman saw that the fruit of the tree was good for food and pleasing to the eye, and also desirable for gaining wisdom, she took some and ate it. She also gave some to her husband who was with her, and he ate it. Temptation would not be tempting at all if it didn't look good. Eve would not have eaten the fruit if it was brown and moldy and had maggots crawling all over it. He would have not kissed the other woman if he thought she looked but ugly. She would have not told that white lie to her friends if she didn't think it made her life look perfect. The truth is, it is all equally counted as sin before God. But I have good news. Jesus knew exactly what it felt like to be tempted himself. In Luke chapter 4, verses 1 and 2, we read, "Jesus, full of the Holy Spirit, left the Jordan and was led by the Spirit into the wilderness, where for 40 days he was tempted by the devil. He ate nothing during those days, and at the end of them, he was hungry." Have you ever experienced hunger? Do you ever get hangry? This is when you are grumpy or angry because you are also hungry. It's bad enough in between meals sometimes, and I know this firsthand. I would not want to get in the way of Abigail and her snacks. What about if you didn't eat for 40 days? Do you think it would be easy to be tempted if you were that hungry? Enter Jesus' first temptation at verse 3. The devil said to him, "If you are the Son of God, tell this stone to become bread." And Jesus said, "That's easy for a son of God to do. I'll tell that stone to not become just bread, but a feast fit for a king. I've been starving for 40 days. It's about time I had some food." No, that's not what Jesus said. That's not what he did. He didn't fall for the temptation, no matter how hangry Jesus was. His real reply, "It is written, man shall not live on bread alone." Jesus was both fully human and fully God, experienced the same hunger and desires that we do, but he never gave in to any temptation. He knew never to trust earthly or fleeting desires. I'm not saying it's wrong to be hungry, but it is wrong to give in to temptation. There is a difference between godly desire and sinful desire, between good desires and bad desires, between final desires and fleeting desires, but more about final desires later. You'll be pleased to know that we have now landed back at Psalm 37. So a little context, there are a total of 150 Psalms in the Bible, and Psalm is another word for poem or song. We don't have any of the original music to the Psalms, which means unfortunately Sue had to read it to us rather than sing it tonight. The Psalms are written by many different authors, but this psalm is written by David. David, the shepherd boy. David, the youngest of 8 sons. David, who played the lyre for King Saul. David, who killed Goliath with a sling and a stone. David, who befriended King Saul's son, Jonathan. David, who married King Saul's daughter, Michal. David, who fled for his life as King Saul attempted to kill him time and time again. David, who spared King Saul's life twice. David, who became king once Saul died. King David, who slept with Bathsheba, killed her husband, then married her for himself. King David, who designed the original temple of the Lord and handed over those plans to his son Solomon, who would become the wisest king of all. That King David from Jesus' own family tree and line. That David, he's the one that writes Psalm 37. And he probably wrote it later on in life. In verse 25, he says, "I was young and now I am old." The psalm contains no prayer or praise, as we would expect, but it is in fact a teaching or a wisdom psalm. King David has also chosen to structure this psalm as an acrostic poem. Acrostic poems use a vertical line of letters, whether at the start or end of a line, to spell out a word or phrase. Here is a Lauren Miller original. Acrostics can be rather tricky, otherwise everyone should write them. I'm glad I can. And if we rearrange the words, you'll see that the first letters of every line spell out the word acrostic. Little English lesson for you. For Psalm 37, in the original Hebrew language it was written in, the letter from the start of each verse spells out the entire Hebrew alphabet, with only the last letter missing. David starts with a letter from the alphabet and expands into a short verse lasting a few lines long. He is constantly comparing the good or righteous to a life of evil or wickedness and reminds us that although evil seems to have the upper hand in this life, that upper hand will not last forever. It is a psalm full of amazing promises for those of us who choose to follow God, as well as a warning to anyone who refuses to follow God and his ways. So let's zoom right in and take a closer look at verse 4. "Take delight in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart." Here we find our word, desires. But this is different to the feelings of desire I was talking about earlier on. The original Hebrew word that has been translated as desires here is pronounced mishulor. And there it is, for anyone fluent in reading Hebrew. This Hebrew word only appears one other time in the entire Bible. We can find it in another psalm written by King David, Psalm 20 in verse 5. May we shout for joy over your victory and lift up our banners in the name of our God. May the Lord grant all your requests. This is when you think, hang on a second, there's no desire in that verse. Mishulor actually means request or petition. So the same Hebrew word has been translated in the NIV to both desires and requests in English. So a more accurate translation of our verse 4 in Psalm 37 would be, the Lord will give you the requests or petitions of your heart. According to the Cambridge Dictionary, the word request means the act of politely or officially asking for something. And the word petition means to make a formal request for something, especially in a law court. I don't know about you, but when I hear the word petition, I think of someone collecting signatures on a massive reel of paper for a worthy cause. I think you'll be pleased to know that even petitions have entered the 21st century. Change.org is an international online site that empowers people to start petitions for issues they care about. They have seen 36,647 victories across 196 countries worldwide. And nearly every hour, another petition through Change.org achieves a victory. The petition started cover many causes, including women's, children's or animal rights, health and disabilities, and the environment. Petitions such as those from Change.org are given over to the government to make a formal request for change for the better. And it's here, in verse 4, that we have confirmation that God will answer the requests of our heart. King David was someone who knew full well the consequences of wrongful desire and of lust. And here he is charging us as the reader to ask God and let God provide us with what we ask for at the perfect time. He is talking about petitioning God to see a change for the better, a request to see the best and final outcome, those final desires. And the most amazing thing about all of this is that God actually does. God answers your requests. He fulfills them. Satisfies them. Every longing, every desire, every request for change, just not right now, just not quite yet. God's timing is not our timing, and Jesus never promised us a pain-free, easy life. But God will do all that he says he is going to do, just in his own timing. God hears every prayer and every whisper of your heart. The Bible tells us that God knows our every desire. In 1 Chronicles chapter 28, it says, "For the Lord searches every heart and understands every desire and every thought." Do you long for peace? In a world that never stops, never switches off, never ceases, and never rests? Do you long for abundance? For newer, bigger, better, and faster? Do you long for security? For surety, safety, certainty, and stability? Do you long for an end to pain, an end to suffering, grief, distress, and affliction? Do you long to see the poor made rich? Do you long to see the sick healed? Do you long to see justice and truth win out? Do you long to see evil halted in its tracks? Do you long for an end to earthquakes, tsunamis, floods, and volcanoes? I know I do. I am fed up with watching the bad guys prosper. I am fed up with sickness. I am fed up with homelessness. I am fed up with war. I am fed up with poverty. I am fed up with abuse. I am fed up with addiction. I am fed up with rape. I am fed up with violence, I am fed up with slavery, and I am fed up with death. But all of this frustration and this time of waiting and temptation and pain will come to an end. And when it ends, there will be a time when there will be no more pain and no more sorrow. No more tears, no more fear of tomorrow. No more anger and no more agony. No more loneliness and no more misery. No more crying and no more fear. But peace and joy, with evil destroyed, alive forever, death again never, where justice reigns, there is hope again, healing instead of pain, certainty and laughter as we enter. Some of the lyrics.